Well, we're going to get started. We're going to be talking about evangelism in Guatemala. I spent 6 years living in Guatemala, and these guys, they'll talk about their association with Guatemala and with each other in a little bit. But I'm going to start this out by reading to you some of my reports from Guatemala when I actually lived there. So this is from the point of view of several years ago, 10 years ago, when I started there. 2007 is when I arrived in Guatemala. So that's over 10 years ago. And I was there for 6 years. These are just portions. I'm not going to bore you with some of the details. I tried to do some anecdotes about some of the people that I met to be encouraging to the Christians. And I think these will be encouraging to you as well. This is Gilmar Perez. Gilmar was given special treatment as the only son of 8 children. His parents never told him no, nor corrected his bad behavior. As if his free reign weren't dangerous enough, his father started sharing alcohol with him at the age of 13. Quickly, Gilmar picked up a habit that haunted him for years to come. Through relationships with some of the Christians in the area, Gilmar's older sister Irma became a Christian in 1998. She began assembling with the Christians in Urbina, even periodically having the assembly in her own house. On various occasions, Gilmar found his way to the door, listening to the praise and Bible teaching within, but never entering in. Quitting school in favor of a job to pay for his alcohol, the pull of the world was still strong for Gilmar. But he didn't stop his frequent eavesdropping at the door of the assemblies of the Christians. At age 19, Gilmar became convinced that he needed a relationship with Christ, and he was baptized. His wife, Maria, came to the same conclusion as well. It took 3 more hard years, the help of his new brethren, and his own determination to try again and again and again for Gilmar to successfully leave alcohol behind for good. He made the hard decision to stay away from family and friends who pulled him down and even committed himself to prepare and present 1 Bible lesson each week, forcing himself to spend time with the Word. Gilmar is 30 now. That was 10 years ago. His children's fear of him has been replaced by obvious affection and respect. He is an apt teacher. He and Maria are great assets to the brethren there. Gilmar Perez is a Christian. He is your brother in Quetzaltenango, Guatemala. This is Gilmar now, not too many years ago. And this is his kids. Jennifer is now married, and they've grown up, and he has grown into one. He's just a good friend. Good friend. Jose Ramos. I think you would be encouraged to know more about some Christians I associate with on an almost daily basis. Jose amazed me the first time I met him in 2006. When he was young, he lost one of his eyes while playing soccer. Careful, guys. The other eye he lost in a barroom brawl. He was left in the dark, only having seen his 2 oldest children with his own eyes. Later in life, he obeyed the gospel, and he devoted his life to God. Life for a blind man would be difficult in whatever country you live in, but being blind in Guatemala offers its special challenges. Many of the modern conveniences that would be considered necessities in countries like the United States are not available in this poorer country. Over time, Jose has accumulated a few items to help him. He went to school for the blind several years ago in the capital and in Quetzaltenango, and he learned to read Braille. In fact, the first time I met him, he sat in a dark room with the book of Hebrews in his lap, the book of Revelation on the table, his hand scanning the pages of the Bible. He also showed me a tool that someone had given him, a tablet, not like this tablet, which he could use to tediously write in Braille. He even showed me a sample of his work, a sermon for the next assembly of the saints. Now, Jose spends a lot of time listening to sermons and taking notes to share with the congregation. Since I've been here, he takes opportunity almost every week to teach a class and to encourage us who are more fortunate than he. Life is difficult for him, but he has learned from his disability, and he has learned to overcome it with the help of God. I tell him often that although he is blind, he sees better than many men because he has seen with spiritual eyes the truth of God. Jose is a Christian. He is your brother. Quetzaltenango, Guatemala. Anselmo, Valle. Two doors stood before Anselmo. In one waited his friends, the promise of life filled with pleasure, excitement, and sin. In the other stood Jesus, and the promise of difficulty, persecution, and righteousness. Anselmo chose Christ. Anselmo never intended to become a gangster. He grew up in a family of Christians, attended the assemblies with regularity. His friends were not bad kids, but they started associating with the wrong group. Anselmo followed the herd and quickly found himself part of a gang. Always in the back of his mind, he knew what he was doing was wrong, but he treasured the friendship and the support that he received. However, the closer he grew to his friends and the further he was drawn away from his family and from God, he became stubborn and rude with his loved ones and the brethren who came to visit. He started spending all of his time with immoral friends and only coming to home to demand food from his mother. At age 15, his family finally gave him an ultimatum. It was time to consider. He could change his ways and continue to live with them, or he could take his bag that they had packed for him and follow his life as a gang member. For several weeks, he waged an internal battle between two worlds he knew that could not coexist. Finally, on the eve of a new year, Anselmo sat with his parents and his 11 brothers and sisters and discussed which door he would choose. When his brothers assured him that he would have the family and support following a changed path, he made his decision to leave his friends and follow Christ. On the new year, he was baptized and began a new life with Christ. That was 5 years ago. Since then, Anselmo has continued his battle against temptation, the world, and found strength in his new family in Christ. He leads the group study in Bible studies. Here he is leading singing. He is an encouragement to me and an example to everyone in the congregation. Every day, each of us is faced with the same decision. From one door, Christ calls us to the path of righteousness. From the other, the devil tempts us to give in to our own self-will. Let us bear one another's burdens. Let us give all the encouragement and support we need. Let us always choose Christ. Anselmo Valle Aguilar is a Christian. He is your brother in Guatemala. His shirt, by the way, says, "Jesus, Jesús en ti confío." Jesus, I trust. I trust in you. I could go on talking to you about the Christians in Guatemala. I could talk to you about Benito. Benito was all signed up to be a pastor of a church, and he just wasn't sure about some of the things that were being taught. Then finally he met Jeronimo, and I'll talk to you about Jeronimo later, Geronimo, for us in English. But he left a good sack of money, a good a promise of money, so that he could become a Christian. I could talk to you about all of these people. This is the congregation that I worked with for 6 years. I was privileged to work with this congregation for 6 years in a little village called Urbina Cantel, Quetzaltenango, Guatemala. And that was a group of about 40, 50 people, a bunch of kids, and we fit in well because we, at the time, we were still a couple with a bunch of kids. I have 6 kids, by the way. I want to tell you just a little bit about how I got to Guatemala. This is my family. This is actually a few years after we had already gotten there. We arrived only with 3 of these children. Right. And, well, you can imagine which one's the oldest. Sophia is the oldest on the right, and then Katie in the middle, and then Emma. Sophia was 3 years old. Katie was 1 or 2. And then Emma was 11 months old when we arrived. And there we are with Alex. He is cooperating very well for the picture up in my arms. And then Joanna is the next one, and then Lydia came later when we moved back to the United States. I didn't always have the desire to leave the United States, probably like many of the people who have here, going to other countries. It wasn't my desire when I was growing up. I learned some Spanish when I was growing up in high school, just like everybody does in Texas. But I didn't do it so I could learn it. I did it so I could, you know, get a good grade and get out of the class. So I really didn't have a desire to leave the country or to preach or to do any of that. But things kind of went along that lines. And finally, I decided I wanted to preach. And then I decided that I wanted to learn Spanish when, across the street from me, I had some neighbors that spoke in Spanish. And I knew that, you know, I learned something about Spanish in high school. I didn't break out those books. And so I decided I'm going to teach my neighbor the gospel, but I couldn't teach him in English, and so I had to do it in Spanish. So I just said, I'll learn Spanish. So I took one course, took another course, took another course, and another course, until I had probably maybe a minor in Spanish. I don't know what happened to my neighbor, but I kept on learning Spanish altogether. Then I got to where it came to kind of a plateau in my Spanish speaking ability, and I wasn't getting forward. It was just a friend of mine, a Christian, recommended to me that I go down to Guatemala to attend a school down there. It's a Spanish school. It's what they call a language immersion program for 3 weeks. I can do anything for 3 weeks. So I decided to go down to 3 weeks. Absolutely amazing. Go to these schools, and it's a school. You sit down for 5 days a week, for 5 hours a day, with a one-on-one teacher. Very economical, and you sit there speaking to them. And you're paying them to speak to you. And they'll talk about anything. They'll even talk about the gospel, which is convenient for a preacher. And so we sit there for 3 weeks. I was able to sit there and pay these. In the mornings, I would go and take these classes, and they would teach me the grammar. In the evenings, I'd go and hang out with the brethren. And so for 3 weeks, I am speaking nothing at all except for Spanish. When I came back to the States, and I took a conversational Spanish course in the University of Texas in the Dallas area, it was horrible. It was a guy who couldn't speak Spanish speaking to a guy who couldn't speak Spanish. And what am I going to learn? What are we going to learn from one another? And I decided at that point, it wasn't going to work. I think you could go that route, and you could eventually learn Spanish that way. But I didn't have the patience anymore. I wanted to learn, and I wanted to learn in fast forward. And so I told my wife, we need to leave the United States. We need to go someplace where we can learn. And so we did. We took our 3 kids, piled everybody into our Honda Pilot, and put everything into a small white trailer, and we crossed Mexico with Jeff's brother. Jeff, or my wife, Amy, is Jeff Smelser's daughter, by the way. And so Daryl, his other brother, went with us through Mexico and down to Guatemala. And once we got to Guatemala, he took off and went back to the United States. But we went to Guatemala to learn how to speak Spanish. And boy, it was such... I had goals of, number one, I wanted to learn Spanish. But I didn't want to just learn Spanish. I wanted my wife to learn Spanish. wanted my kids to learn Spanish. I wanted us to be useful in the Lord's kingdom in Spanish wherever we are. But if we're going to do that, we have to plug in. And we have to receive all of that. And so it was for, we ended up going down there for 2 years. Let me step back. This foreign, the language immersion programs, there are a lot of places that do this. Quetzaltenango in particular is a place where they have a small industry built around Spanish immersion programs. And there's like 100 different schools that will offer these type of programs. And they're just absolutely wonderful. You just have to be careful because you might end up spending 6 years there like I did. So be careful. But we were there for 6 years. My first goal, we had two goals. First goal was to learn Spanish. And I'm thankful to God that after 6 months, instead of being a liability to the congregation, we became more of an asset. And we were able to be useful to the brethren. I have a map here where Guatemala is, just south of Mexico, and so you can drive to Guatemala if you want to. This is where we lived in Quetzaltenango. Quetzaltenango, the shortened version of Quetzaltenango is Xela. And we lived, it's kind of in the western side of Guatemala, up in the highlands. Most of this is a very mountainous area. Switchbacks. There's no straight highway in the country, but there's a lot of switchbacks. And so we lived, even though we lived close to the equator, we lived about 8,000 feet up in the air. And so it was very cool environment. Even though it was close to the equator, so it's cool environment, same all year round. So there were some really cool advantages to living in the city. Literally, Guatemala is about the size of. About the size of Pennsylvania. There's just I was looking at the square mileage. It's about the size of Pennsylvania, and population density. Most of the population is down in this. If you look at this as a boot, down in the bottom portion of this is where. Here's the capital, Guatemala, and then Quetzaltenango would be over here. But the majority of the population is in this territory right here. And speaking of territories and where Christians are, Guatemala is a country that has no lack. I shouldn't say that. There are a lot of congregations in Guatemala. When I was there, I couldn't put all dots on every single congregation. There's maybe I think I personally visited about 30 different congregations. And so if you think Pennsylvania with about 30 congregations distributed, that's pretty good. Travel is really difficult in Guatemala, and so a lot of these are very small congregations. Some of them are larger congregations, but there are a lot of works going on, and so the majority of my time I spent in Quetzaltenango here, but then I did spend a lot of time traveling, going and seeing different congregations, trying to focus. I tried to focus more on just single congregations and trying to have more influence on one group of people, and then I would move on to the next group of people. But these are some of the people that I worked with on a constant basis in Urbina. I won't tell you very much about them. A bunch of kids, like I said earlier. Here's my crew. Sophia's over on the right hand side. This is just absolutely amazing to me to get those kids among the Guatemalans. So you talk about kids don't know the difference, and that they can get as dirty as the rest of them, and they did a lot of times. And Sophia is over on the right hand side. She's my oldest daughter. She's 15 now. She's taller than I am. I think she takes after Zach somehow. but she's 15 now. Katie and Emma, both of them have grown up, and all of these kids, it's amazing to look at this picture. All of these kids have grown up, and some of them are doing really, really well. Some of them are not doing well at all. But this is the congregation that we landed in when we were there. There they are teaching some Bible class. This is Paola, which is the daughter of Jeronimo. I'll talk to you about Jeronimo in just a moment. She's a fine young lady that was teaching Bible class then. She's married since and has a baby as well. And is good, good people. This is just interesting. I had to teach them what a potluck was. Potluck? Here's a potluck. What is this? A potluck. And they had this, every time they would get together, they would, well, I'll take my food and you'll take it. But we don't share. We don't share foods. And I had to teach them, oh, well, let's do something different. Let's share foods. And I had to teach them what a potluck was. It turned out to be a kind of a Guatemalan potluck, and they've made their own tradition out of it. But this is the first time. Oh, Jeff Smeltzer is here in this picture, by the way. So that they were here visiting us, and that was just really interesting. Just put everything on the tablecloths in the middle, and some people had some limes, some people had some rice, and sometimes it was just small portions. You get one kernel of corn and one that's not exactly the idea of a potluck, but hey, this works. We had fun. We really grew to love these brethren greatly. One of the greatest works I think that I did while I was there was to really sit down and teach people how to study the Bible and work with them on an individual basis. This is Marco, who is one of Jeronimo's sons, and we had a some Bible classes that we worked through. We would pick a book and divide it up among the men, and say so and so will take this chunk of the book of Matthew. So, very basic idea, but they really didn't have the practice of going through a book of the Bible. It was just usually just thematic studies, maybe just texts that they are always familiar with, and that's all that they ever really knew. But plugging into the context, that's not something that they were really hadn't really done any serious Bible study like that. So Marco, I'm taking Marco through, I can't remember what book we were going through here. Benito, I did the same thing with him. Here is preaching and presenting some material. Mardo is not someone that I worshiped with in Urbina, but Mardo is a young man that I don't remember exactly how I got to know him for the first time. As I remember it, he thought it was really cool that there was a gringo in Guatemala, and he wanted to get to know the gringo, and so he came to visit. And so I said, okay, we can talk. How about we study the Bible while we talk? And so if I remember correctly, he told me later on, he wasn't too keen about this, you know, sitting down to study the Bible. You know, what are we going to do? And it's not Sunday. What are we going to do about this? But okay, we'll do it. But he was really interested in having a cool gringo friend. I don't know about the cool part, but I was a gringo. But in any case, Mardo, over time, became just more and more interested, less interested about the gringo, and more interested about, wow, this is the Bible? These are just things that just he had never seen before. And he became so interested in Bible study that he was just asking questions all the time. Still, twice a week, I get texts from Mardo. He says, what does this mean in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 5? So I leave it for a while. I have to go study it myself. And I get back to him, and then, well, when I studied it a long time ago. No, so I'll answer his question. But then he comes back to say, what does it mean? What is this thing in Ezekiel? Where is he getting this? Why am I? And I'm sure that I'm not the only one. I'm sure that there's... I'm sure that Stephen could tell you the same things. And then Eric, he knows Eric Huggins, Grady's brother. And I'm sure he does the same thing with Eric as well. He kind of distributes the questions. I'm sure what he does is he asks me the question. And he sends the same question to Stephen. And sends the same question to Eric. And then he sees, okay, how does he answer this one? How does he answer this one? And see who's right. I don't know exactly how he does it. But Mardo is one of the, he's not the greatest public speaker. He's not the most brave street evangelist that you will find. But as far as an individual who is absolutely interested in knowing more and more about the Bible, that has just really, he's really impressed me. And we've become really good friends over the years. And even though there are some other brethren that who might be more eloquent in their speech, Mardo is one that just has just a solid foundation of what the scriptures really say, what God's kingdom is really about. So I've really appreciated him. And I know that he will do a greater work in Guatemala over time than what I ever will. Speaking of men who've done good work over time, I'd like to talk to you about two individuals who really made my time in Guatemala really possible. God gave me the blessing of knowing this man. Geronimo is his name, Geronimo. And he is the first Guatemalan that I met. I had trouble finding him, but he had trouble finding me the first time I was there in Chela. Just kind of silly, but fun story. The first time I was in Chela, I was there for the language immersion program, and I had missed Sunday worship. I called him up on the phone, and something did not work out. I called, and I couldn't get through. One of the kids picked up. I couldn't understand them. They couldn't understand me, and finally, I couldn't make it to Sunday worship. I didn't know where Sunday worship was. He was going to come pick me up at some point. But then, lo and behold, I get out of class on Monday, and I hear someone shouting, "David! David!" And here's this guy looking at all the gringos he can find in the streets, because it's a language immersion school. There are a lot of kids coming from the Americas. And so he's yelling at all these, "David!" No reaction. "David!" No reaction. And finally he comes, and my first reaction was, "Oh no, who is this guy? Who is this guy?" I mean, just from his aspect, from his appearance, there is no glory in this in what I saw. Just as far as this his car, for one thing. He's coming along and his car is bum, 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 bum. I'm going to get in that? And he reaches over and he has to open up because the window doesn't go down. He opens up the door and it's just dusty and dirty inside. And there he is with his kid in the back seat. Who is this guy? "Oh, it's Geronimo. Okay, nice to meet you." And so I get in the car with him and I go and we worship with the Christians. It's the funniest conversation I ever had while I was down there. I get back to the language immersion program, and I talk with the teacher, and she asks me the question, "What did you do over the weekend?" And she's used to getting answers from these college students that are there. I said, I had a good party last night. And I told her, "I went to church." "Oh, wow. Well, where did you go to church?" "I don't know. I don't remember exactly where it was." "Oh, okay. Well, how did you get there?" "There's this guy named Geronimo that took me." "Oh, so you knew someone before you came to Guatemala?" "Oh, no, not exactly." "So how did you meet?" "Well, he found me in the street." Worried about, so you just find the next person you find in the street and just go with him. And I had to explain to him the type of relationship that we have as Christians. And I don't know who he is, but he's my brother. And over the years, he didn't just become a brother to me. He became like a father to me. And a grandfather to my kids. And absolutely, he is, I showed a picture of, this minefield of how many congregations there are in Guatemala. A lot of those congregations depended on the influence of Geronimo, planting, encouraging, and he's one of the solid rocks in Guatemala, and I owe a lot to him and to his influence. He welcomed us into his home, into his life, and I'm very grateful for him. He's not in Urbina anymore. He lives in a place called La Máquina in La Costa, on the coast, but we keep in touch every once in a while. The other person I owe everything to, besides God, so besides Geronimo, is this young lady, my wife, Amy, who's the daughter of Jeff and Libby, and she's a very, very good woman, and partly for selfish reasons, and also partly for a good lesson for young men who are here, a lesson about finding a good woman to marry, I want you to I want to tell you just a little bit about the experience that she had in Guatemala. I have there's an article that I wrote for a brother when I got back to the States. He asked me to write an article about preacher's wife living abroad. And so, well, I could tell him a little bit about that. So I wrote an article and sent it to him. And I'll read you just a little bit. I'm not going to give you the whole story here. But it starts out like this. Amy says this. Are there grocery stores in Guatemala? Me. Surely. People eat there, too. Amy. Do they have hospitals? I would imagine. Amy. Where are we going to live? Me. We'll figure it out when we get there. I'm one type of personality that just kind of, I can kind of roll with the punches. We'll figure it out when we get there. It'll be fine. Amy, on the other hand, wants to plan. She wants to know the details. She wants to... And I did not do very well introducing her to all of the details, partly because I did not know all of the details. I was there for a Spanish immersion program. I didn't look at the grocery stores. Everything was put on my plate, and I didn't look for hospitals, thankfully, while I was there. I didn't look for markets. Everything I knew was just, well, school and going to visit with the brethren. But this was one of the conversations, one of the many conversations that I had with my wife, Amy, when we were considering moving to and working in Guatemala in 2007. On a brief visit the year before, I had met with brethren in Quetzaltenango and had limited experience traveling inside the country, but I had no idea what it would be to live in Central America. That's not much comfort for a wife and mother of three small children, 3, 2, and 10 months. Whose mind is haunted by thoughts of typhoid, malaria, kidnappings, etc. But we were determined to learn Spanish and to encourage Christians there, so... We went. So in November 2007, we crammed into a Honda Pilot in a small white trailer to the gills and drove the full length of Mexico with our children and Amy's Uncle Daryl. And we had a route roughly determined and communicated with a few brethren in Guatemala, but still had many questions about the journey itself and about our arrival. Amy must have been thinking of Abraham's wife, Sarah, as she too swallowed her fears, leaving everything she knew behind, putting faith in God and following her husband's leadership. Three Guatemalan brethren were waiting for us when we crossed the Mexican-Guatemalan border. Saturday was one of the busiest days at the border in the town of El Carmen, with hordes of people shouting one thing over the other, pushing goods and services on new arrivals. It was a long, hot, sticky day as we filed paperwork to legalize our vehicle and cargo. I had to leave Amy and our children with Brother Fariñas. Both remember their first conversations dominated by smiles and hand gestures. Dirty children crowded around the car, peeking in the windows at the gringos with Barbie children. We all had awkward feelings of being constantly different, constantly watched. For a few weeks, we lived in a hotel room on the east side of Quetzaltenango. Amy spent most of her days in the hotel, washing clothes in the shower, boiling water to drink, and being frustrated with beans that would not cook in an electric pot at high elevation. When I left with Brother Jeronimo to visit brethren in other places, Amy did not dare to take the children outside. We laugh now, smiling at our ignorance and their resulting fears. I'm sure that the Guatemalan brethren laugh even more. Yet the feelings of doubt that plagued us were very real, especially for this young mother. And we held on to one another and called upon God, trusting in his arm. I'm going to zoom through some of this. It's talking about some of the fun things that happened to us. There's some faux pas that she made that I made as well there in Guatemala. And talking about calling several things that just absolutely are very different and that she had to learn. This is Amy carrying two children at once. One in the front, one in the back. That's Alex on the back. He's grown a little bit. And buying things in the market. You know, I can... getting on the chicken bus. The Gringles call them the chicken bus. And Amy's in the back. Among a bunch of men. And with her little kids on there as well. I absolutely love this picture. Seeing her... That's not our house. That was Kilmar's house. And she was doing the cooking. I don't know why she was doing the cooking, particularly on this occasion. There were lots of occasions where she would do the cooking. She's just helping out while she's there. There are a lot of occasions where, well, maybe Maria was sick. Or another lady was sick. And Amy would drop everything and try to figure out their stove. And try to figure out their pots and pans. And try to figure out their way of cleaning. And she took everything with just jumping in. Cooking and cleaning and doing everything just like they would. We were obviously different. There's things that we couldn't change about our skin color. And obviously different because of our culture. But we learned to live in Guatemala and learned to love Guatemala. And it was absolutely amazing experience. At times, I have asked myself, how might things have been different if I had been a single man working as an evangelist in Guatemala? Obviously, there would have been advantages in not having to worry about the health and safety of the family and more time to devote to the work. It would have given me different freedoms and different opportunities, but honestly, I don't think I could say what would be better or worse. It would have been different. But what especially made having a wife and a family with me in Guatemala a fruitful and joyful experience was not only having a comfortable home and wife to return to, although I enjoyed that. Rather, what made Amy an asset to the work was that she gave herself to the Lord and sacrificed everything to do so. If I had married a woman who was wrapped in herself and in her comforts, in her conveniences, my work would have suffered, comforts of home or no. We would not have even made it to Guatemala to begin with. However, because Amy was determined to not let herself get in the way of doing good, being good, she made all the difference in the work, in the brethren, and in me. If it sounds like I'm impressed, it's because I am. In foreign or domestic work, we need more women and men with her character and resoluteness for the Lord. Amy and I recently moved back to the States and are now helping to plant a work in Philadelphia. Our adventure continues. Our challenges change. But what will make our work fruitful will be our willingness to constantly consider ourselves abroad and sacrifice until we reach our true home with Him. That is something that's really beneficial for anyone going to another country. You have to leave your culture behind. You have to leave your identity behind. Your true identity becomes Jesus Christ, being Christian. And you forget all the stuff. You can focus on what really matters. I pray that young women and young men like you can also have that same spirit. Even though you don't live abroad, don't focus on the stuff of this life. Focus on the stuff that comes. Find a woman that's willing to do the same, and she will help you, be an aid to you, if you move to Guatemala or another country, or even here, be an asset in the reign and the kingdom of God. After we were in Guatemala, we moved back to the United States. For family reasons, we felt it was going to be necessary, better to be back in the States. We moved back to Philadelphia, and we met with Scott. Right before we moved back to Guatemala, or back to the United States, someone came knocking on our door. I had no idea who he was. But because of several connections that we had, I said, "All right, we're about to move, but you can come on and we'll take a risk." That was Stephen. And that was my first time to meet him in Guatemala. And he's become one of my favorite persons. And I'll let him tell you a little bit about what his experiences has been in Guatemala and with Guatemalans. And later on, if you have any questions, so we'll let you ask those questions.
I hope you guys listened. It's a real blessing in weeks like this to listen about different trips that people have taken. But if you want to know how the work gets done, that's how the work gets done. That is by people moving and devoting their life to this kind of work. I'm going to tell you about a couple of trips that I've taken, but David's been a huge encouragement to me and to my family, and I hope he's been to you too. So I took a couple of trips to Guatemala, one in October of 2013. It was my first time out of the country. I had never met David, but again, we had some mutual connections that had encouraged me to reach out to him. I had taken some Spanish in high school. I took 3 years and then forgot it all my senior year when I didn't take Spanish. I went to college. I ended up going to a bilingual congregation there, which is really helpful in making me learn more, but I was still kind of hobbling along in my Spanish. And I ended up deciding I want to be immersed in the language. I want to try to push myself. And so I got connected with David and flew to Guatemala by myself and found a bus and was driven on this bus out to Shela and got off the bus and found David and stayed for a week in Guatemala and learned so much in going outside of my comfort zone from the brethren there in Urbina. And we traveled to several places in Guatemala, all these places in blue. I won't go through all of the different ones, but it pushed me in a lot of different ways with the language. As you've heard other people describe how weird it feels to be in a place where the English crutches are taken out from under you, and now you really have to sink or swim in a new language, and that's challenging, but it's a very rewarding experience. So we traveled and were able to do some different studies in these different places. Some of these places were places I visited the next summer when I went back with Eric, Grady's older brother. And so traveled different places. Guatemala is a beautiful place. But this picture represents something else. Is I was absolutely terrified in this picture because I climbed up to this like rock spire. And I think Amy took this picture. But it's something that you have to do things to get out of your comfort zone if you want to grow. And it's scary, and it's hard, but you gotta do it. You gotta take the plunge.
Amen.
Here are some pictures of some of the different brethren who we were blessed to meet. I think this is specifically the 2014 trip with Eric. And there's just so many things you learn by getting, again, out of your comfort zone. One of the things that impressed me over and over again is just the hospitality and generosity of people who have so much less than we do. And you go there, and of course, you're eating with them, and I know probably on many occasions that they did special things for us that they didn't do normally for themselves. But you go to a place like that, and you look around, and it's, you know, like a concrete block place with tin roof or whatever, but you're taken care of. And these people are happy, and these people are just giving in all kinds of ways to these strangers who have come in, who they don't know. And it's moving to be on the receiving end of that kind of hospitality and generosity. And it makes me want to, with the abundance that we've been given, do the same kind of thing for other people. It's as David's already well illustrated with Mardo and with other people, it's so encouraging to be in another place where like everything is different from what you're used to, but the word is the same. And people's hunger and benefit from the word is the same. And that's one thing that's just wonderful. Is again, like I get these texts from Mardo like David does from time to time, and responding to him. It's questions that we grapple with, that we talk about And again, sometimes I'm having to, I don't know about that. That's a really good question. I'll have to think about that. But they're reading and studying and growing, and sometimes it's a question just from their personal study, and sometimes it's a question because of studies that they're having. And I grow from that. We can sharpen each other in that way. As David's already alluded to, living in a third world country just comes with some particular challenges. When we stayed there, we stayed with Hilmar, his wife Maria. And when we were there, especially with Eric in 2014, Maria was just going through some really, really tough health challenges. I won't go into all the details there, but I remember one night where she had just like passed out when we were singing that evening at home. And so they called the doctor, and the doctor is this guy on a motorcycle who's not in like any medical uniform or anything, who like comes up. And we're like standing outside in the dark, like directing him to their house. And it's just different than it is here. But they have persevered through so much. I remember Maria, even in her condition, making so much effort to be at the special studies that we were doing there. And just being such an encouragement. And there was at least one of the studies she came to, she passed out and had to be brought back around before we could get back home. But just the endurance of these brethren is remarkable and is a great reminder to me that I'm a wimp a lot of the time and I need to be tougher. One of the great blessings that came from my very first trip there is to spend some time in Huehuetenango, where Mardo and Jordy were at the time. Mardo no longer lives in Huehue, but Jordy and his family are there. In a very, very small congregation. They've had some really kind of discouraging things happen there. But when I was there, Mardo was there, and when I came home, we started up a Bible study over Skype. And I thought, this is a great chance to continue to practice my Spanish and to encourage these guys because they're in a more isolated location. And we are still doing this study. This was in 2013, and I'm just going to click through some pictures from the last 7 years of studying with them, because things have just changed. This is Jordy's brother Luis, who joined us for a while. As you can tell, we have a lot of fun in the studies. David is being silly in this particular one with some bigotes, some mustaches. Lots of changes. This is when Lydia was born, and David was showing her to us. There's more of Jordy's family there from Weiwei, studying in different times, different places, 2016. This is David being silly. At the bottom, this is when our daughter Fiona was born, and we were letting her meet them. This is when Luisa's daughter was born. Will Ciotto joined us in 2017 and has been working on his Spanish as well. 2018, continuing our study, and then 2019, we had a brother also named Luis Mota from Mexico join us just a few weeks ago. And then this guy, Michael Works, joined us just recently. But one of the things I want to talk about with this is just that it's great to go on short trips and encourage brethren a little bit, but modern technology has made it to where we can build lasting relationships with people that we visit just a little bit. Now again, the real work is done by going and staying and face-to-face contact. That's the primary way that we can influence people long-term. But this way of reaching out to people has been a blessing to me, and I hope it's been a blessing to these guys as well, to go through different seasons of life and be studying together. We studied several books together. For a while, we were doing what we called preguntas de dos minutos, which were two-minute questions, which were normally 45-minute questions. But again, just talking about our work and the different people we're studying with and how do you approach this and what about this scripture, and a lot of ironing sharpening iron over those years. And I feel so blessed to have shared that relationship with these guys. One of the blessings that this has been is to allow me to continue to practice my Spanish. And again, this was not something like I took Spanish because I knew I wanted to preach one day and Spanish would be the most useful in that. But if you are already learning Spanish or want to learn Spanish, some things that helped me, the big principle, you've probably heard this, use it or lose it. Even if you take a year off in school, like use all the Spanish you know, practice it, talk with people who speak Spanish, Just use it at every opportunity you can, and that really helps you go. And I'm grateful that these guys have been really patient, because David will tell you, the first time I went to Guatemala, my Spanish was not so great. My Spanish is still not great, but it's grown a lot just from using it and continuing to use it, even when I know I'm not saying everything correctly, but just kind of banging my head against the wall until I get it. So, read scripture in Spanish. Get familiar with the language of scripture. And that's just super helpful, especially with passages you already know well in English. Read them in Spanish. Start to do your daily Bible reading. Adopt a book in Spanish. Those of you who are at IBC, Tom Hawley's class. If you can adopt a book in Spanish, it will really help you to pick up, because just the more you're hearing it correctly, the better you'll be able to use it when you speak it. One thing that was really helpful for me, surprisingly, was learning songs in Spanish, because those stick in my head better. And again, sometimes it's a song you're familiar with, and those words and vocabulary will help you. And then, of course, you're learning to sing the songs that you sing with your brethren in Spanish. There's lots of apps that you can use. Technology has a lot of temptations, but it can be used in a lot of good ways, and language learning is one of those things. I'm not going to go into all the details there, but find ways to constantly expose yourself to the language. There's lots of great ways to be doing that. The thing I want to end on before handing it off to Grady is the thing that stands out to me from my experience is just that the gospel is for all. Everybody needs it. We have struggles that cross cultures, and the more that we invest ourselves in foreign work, the more we see that as different as we are, Jesus Christ is the same, and he's the one that we need.
Well, I feel like I have very little to add to all that was just said about the work in Guatemala. I think the one perspective that I am able to offer is that my trip there was less than a month ago, and so I was able to spend 2 weeks there with that guy, my brother. And the other thing about my trip there is my perspective is one from somebody who knows very little Spanish. I did take 3 years in high school, but that was over 10 years ago, and I lost basically all of that. And so basically just 6 months about before we went on the trip, I started trying to work on Spanish again. And I would not have been able to do it without Eric. Eric's been teaching Spanish for 10 years in the Pittsburgh area, and so he is much more gifted in that than I am, also more gifted in facial hair. But he was a wonderful blessing. What we were able to do is he translated two sermons for me prior to us leaving, and he recorded them. And I listened to those sermons again and again and repeated them and made sure I knew what I was saying exactly. I had written them in English, and he translated them. So I was able to preach in Spanish, preach two lessons in Spanish, and then the other two lessons that I preached in the different congregations that we went to, he translated for me. But it was certainly a blessing to have somebody who was able to communicate in a much better way than me. I'll just run through real quick a few of the places that we went. You might see a little overlap with some of the people that were talked about earlier. We started out in Guatemala City, and at least from what Eric has told me, Guatemala City is a place that a lot of American brethren don't visit as much as some of the other areas, because relatively speaking, it is maybe a slightly more dangerous place. We felt safe the entire time we were there, and the brethren took very good care of us. But the brethren here, we stayed with Enrique and his family. I don't know how well you can see that. By the way, Marta, who was talked about earlier, accompanied us on the entire trip. He helped organize our travel and the different places that we went. But we stayed with Enrique and his family. And the brethren there at the La Brigada Church in Guatemala City were extremely encouraging. I think sometimes we can have the mindset that, these brethren need our help. And certainly, where we can be an encouragement, where we can be a help, we want to do that. But these brethren are doing good work, doing very good work. They're, I think, as much of an encouragement to us as we hopefully were to them. They're very evangelistically minded. After services, they got together and were talking to us about the lesson and very eager to talk. We talked through the book of Romans, is what we did primarily. And Enrique took us different places through the city, talking with different contacts that he had. And so it was a very encouraging group. We spent 3 days, three nights. I would teach a lesson, then Eric would teach a lesson each night that we were there. We then went to Weiwei Tenango, which is where Jordy preaches, and his brother Luis, their family that Stephen talked about, that he has a continuing, he and David have a continuing study with. And they own a bakery, a panaderia, there. And so that's Eric helping out with some of the tasks with one of their younger sons. The group there in Weiwei Tenango, as Stephen mentioned briefly, is struggling a little bit more right now. They've lost some members. Some of them have started to have children. Luis is busy with his job. And so they're in a more discouraging place, and I hope that we were able to be an encouragement to them. While I was preaching there in Jordy's house one day, we did have a cow stick its head through the window, or the door, I guess. So we spent 3 days there and seeking to encourage them. But keep the brethren there in your prayers. I know they're struggling with discouragement at this time a lot. We went from there to Shayla, which is where David and Amy were. We preached one night in Urbina, and then also two nights with the congregation in Bacha. David talked about all the children there. They were very lively, very encouraging, very fun to be around. More than once while we were there, they have this thing about tickling. At least me, it didn't happen to Eric a whole lot. But and so it became kind of a thing throughout our time there that they would continually come and try to tickle me. And so that's what's going on here. But it was a joy to be with the brethren there. There is Hiamar and his family. We went and had a meal with his son-in-law and daughter. Jennifer, that was talked about earlier, her husband, now Leo, is not a Christian, and so we were able to go and spend time with them, talk to him about the gospel, and had a very good talk with him, and we pray that in time he will commit his life to Christ. So if you'd like something to be praying about, you can pray for Leo. From Shayla, we actually went one day to San Rafael, but I'll get to that. We spent more time there later. We went up to San Pedro from there, and we're with Brother Fadimias. And we just spent one day there and taught. We spent some time in the market there. Ate a lot of fruits that I didn't even know existed. And so it was a joy to be with the brethren there in San Pedro. A great deal of our time was spent with the brethren in San Rafael. And this is where Mardo preaches, spends the most of his time as an evangelist. And we had, I think, seven different congregations gather together, or brethren from seven different places come to our lessons there in San Rafael. And as was already talked about, they had a very deep hunger for the word. In fact, one evening, we were having supper, and after supper, this young kid, Angel, came and he started talking to Eric, and he said, well, Brother Fariñas was going to teach us about the consequences of sin, but he didn't have a chance to. Can you teach us? And so we just sat down, and I don't know exactly how old he is, but maybe 9 years old, and even at that age, they just have a hunger for the word. And so we were very encouraged by the brethren there. All chill a little bit here. We took a hike in Shela, up La Pulga, and we're able to enjoy the beauty of God's creation there. It is a very beautiful place. I wasn't as brave as Stephen in his adventurous spirit there, but just wanted to share a little bit of that. We also had a hike in San Rafael up to a waterfall, and nobody warned me about what it is that we were doing. It was after services on Sunday, and Eric said, oh, by the way, we're going to go on this hike. We didn't change out of our clothes. In fact, the Guatemalans didn't change their clothes. There were some of the women wearing skirts. And we start this hike, and it keeps going, and it keeps going, and it keeps going. And then all of a sudden we get to a place where we have to use lassos to get up the side of the hill. Actually, twice we had to do that. And eventually, we finally got there. But it's amazing just the endurance that some of these brethren have in comparison to some of us wimps. So, but while it was beautiful there, there were definitely some things for my first time out of the country that definitely made me feel like I was out of my element. I don't know how well you can see some of these things. This is a picture of the chicken bus, and they just pack in as many people as they can fit in there. And so thankfully, the longest we ever had to ride on a chicken bus was about 3 hours. Some of the other bus rides that we took were a little nicer. We had an occasion in San Rafael where we went in to the home of the brethren there, and they said, well, we had made fish soup, but we thought you guys wouldn't like that, and so we made hamburgers. And Eric, I don't know why, he didn't, but he said, no, we want the fish soup. And so we ended up with fish soup. But it was good. There's a chicken inside the house staring at me. That was in the bathroom, so, there's just differences in the way that they live, but that's what they're used to, and it's even with what little they have in some cases, they're extremely generous to us. This last picture, the night before we left, we, had originally planned to take one of the nicer buses back to Guatemala City, but it ended up that they were going to be closing a road, and one of the brethren there wanted to drive us. Eric said, oh, okay, you know, that should work out well. I was a little bit unsure about the situation, so I asked Eric, I said, so he has a car that he's going to drive us in? And so he asked about it, and he said, yeah, it's a car. Well, we walk out, and it is his pickup truck. And so we laid in the back of the truck for 5 hours. We didn't realize it was going to be about 50 degrees outside. And going past, we look all happy right there. But through the rest of the trip, we were like this. We felt like we were being smuggled out of the country. there were aspects of the trip that were definitely a bit of a culture shock for me. But I want to share a few lessons from my perspective. As somebody who this is their first time out of the country, knowing very little of the language, I'll say the first day that I was there was extremely difficult. I by that evening, I hadn't been able to follow a lot of the conversation. I just felt like, will somebody please talk to me in English? But it got better. And the more time that I spent there, I still wasn't able to communicate as much as I wanted to, but I got to a point where I could follow conversations. I could understand what was being said, and I could start to contribute in small ways, and sometimes if I couldn't think of exactly how to say what I wanted to say, I had Eric there, which was a great blessing. But one lesson that I want to share is not to let limitations keep you from doing what you can. As Stephen said, I think it's extremely important that we have people who are willing to make that sacrifice, do the hard things, to go over there and live 6 years. Be invested fully in that work. And I hope that some people here would be inspired by hearing about those who are doing that and seek to do the same thing. However, not everybody can do that. We're all different parts of the body, and that's okay. For me, my wife has some health issues that date back to an aneurysm that she had in high school. And for us, the idea of doing foreign work has always seemed kind of off the table. And have had very little exposure to foreign language. But I think sometimes we think, well, you know, I can't do that. That's not going to be me. I can't go and live over there. And so I'm just not gonna worry about that. I'm not going to do anything. Do what you can. If you have an opportunity, use it. Do what you can to lift up the hands of others in doing that work. If you can even, I was very encouraged, certainly by Tim's talk earlier, and by those who went with Sean. You know, they're not going to be able to move over there. They're not going to be able to communicate in language, but they supported him in that. And I think even if we can't do as much as maybe we'd like to do, do what we can. And be willing to, as Stephen said, get outside of your comfort zone. Be willing to challenge yourself. You know, I don't think anybody ever is going to be able to learn the language until you have that immersion moment, and that's always going to be uncomfortable. And so certainly going over there, especially initially, was very uncomfortable. It was culture shock in many ways. But be willing to do that. As Stephen said, that's how we grow. I think that applies in many different areas in our work for the Lord. I think if nothing else, being able to go over helped me develop a much more global perspective of the Lord's work of the church. I think sometimes we get kind of our limited cultural perspective, American perspective of what the church is, what the gospel is. I think we need to realize that certainly the gospel didn't originate with us, right? And there are many brethren in other areas doing good work, and I think just being exposed to that and seeing that is a wonderful blessing for me. And I think as all that you can do to expose yourself to that will be helpful in your perspective as well. And then finally, equip yourselves today for future opportunities. I think I, through the years, have had the perspective, well, I know I'm not going to be able to, I don't think, at least certainly the Lord can do amazing things, but I don't think I'm going to be the person to be able to go over there and stay 6 years, 10 years. And so I'm just not going to worry about that. I think we need to work now. I wish now that when I went down to FC, maybe I joined Stephen over there at the bilingual congregation. I wish that when I was in high school and I was studying Spanish, I had taken it more seriously. Be equipping yourselves now, working now, to develop skills that you can use for the Lord in the future. So I hope that's an encouragement to you. We can open it up in any little time that we have left.
Yeah, I thought I'd end with a couple applications, but I think the applications have already been. Anyway, I think it'd be more interesting to get your questions or comments or whatever applications you see or anything you want to add to the discussion. Anybody want to ask anything to any of the men? Winston. Definitely, a mature Christian
in a work that is struggling anywhere, it's going to be it's just a huge asset. I've been really encouraged by the efforts that people have done, for example, going up to Boston. and you know the benefit that has. I'm just going to go to Boston. They're not from there, but they move there. They can find work there, so that it can be an encouragement there. Catherine Bishop went to Philadelphia, not because she really loves Philadelphia, but she wanted to encourage it. That is such an encouragement to us there. So if someone going to Guatemala, definitely, if you go to Guatemala, they will put you to work. Even if you call yourself a full-time evangelist or not, they will put you to work. Just like everybody works, not everybody, but there is a spirit of sharing the work together. But that can be hugely beneficial for yourself and also for the brethren there. Good question. Kim, this is your last name. I'm sorry. Noah.
How long do you think it's like the average time to learn Spanish? How much do you think it would
take? It all depends on who you are. For me, I felt like I was very... I didn't feel like I was a natural at learning language. My wife, however, she took French and German in college, and she's a language. She really really enjoys language. I enjoy language, but she just has a natural knack for it, I think. And so she learned when she got to Guatemala. She was speaking Spanish in a hurry, and maybe she didn't know the grammar like I did. At least I took pride in that. But she could say a lot of things that I had no idea what she was saying, but she just picked it up as she was. So it really depends on the individual. Both individuals really have to invest. There's no easy thing about learning a language. It all depends on who you are. It all depends on as well how you go about learning it. I spend a lot of time in the States taking one class, taking another class, taking another class, taking another class. Boy, this is dragging on for a long time. And so I finally said, wow, I can just invest a short amount of time and get a lot done, or I could just spend the rest of my life trying to learn Spanish here in the United States, and I'll just never get it done. You can do it. I could have gone back to school, get my master's, and really focus on it, and people have done that, and have done really well. But I wanted to fast track. And so it all depends on what you're willing to do and how much you're willing to invest.
I had a question about the reception of the gospel with people in that kind of culture. You mentioned obviously it's not as wealthy relative, but since you've been there and kind of doing the same kind of work in Philadelphia, do you see a difference in how people respond to the gospel here on average as there, or is it pretty much the same?
Yes and no. I think we have. We have the definitely in certain cultures there's more of an openness. In Guatemala there's more openness among certain places. Definitely you can find places where everybody's just kind of closed up. In the highlands of Guatemala, people are a little bit more closed than they are in the coast for some reason. Warmer climate, warmer heart. I don't know if that's the reason. people were more open to talk when people just sit on, you know, it's like old school people in the United States sitting on their porch, and that's the way it is here. Trying to air out there in on the coast. So definitely there were some closed people and suspicious people in the highlands. But when they could see your goodwill and see the desire that you had to share with something, then they opened up a lot. Here in the States, I think the difficulty that I have here as compared to Guatemala is not so much of a lack of openness, although there is that among people that I've met, but in Guatemala I had lots of contacts just through so many Christians that were already there. They had their friends, and so it was easier to get contact that way. And then now here, starting with a smaller congregation, it's been more difficult that way. And so starting with, if you have no friend, no perspective, that you're starting from scratch with someone, it's always hard to get that. So I think just definitely here in the States there is there's more materialism and there's less interest in spiritual things than you would have in a poorer country. But that's... There's so many different people in both cultures, and so I can't say that it's a blanket statement. Yes, sir?
What made you want to go to Guatemala?
Good question. So I went to Guatemala originally because of the school there. A friend of mine, a Christian, recommended that particular school because he had gone there. And I had no idea where I could go, so I said, okay, I'll go to the one that you went to. You said there's a church there. I can worship, and I can also go to school at the same time. And that worked out really well. I was there for 3 weeks. After those 3 weeks, I thought, I'll never go back there again. Adios, but I'm not, I doubt I'll ever see you again. But that's when I started to consider, wow, this conversational Spanish is not working here in the United States. I need to find something fast track. So I decided to go back. I looked at different countries. I limited myself to 3 countries just for the sake of making my choice easier. I went to Peru and investigated Peru. I went to Mexico on the border of Texas and Mexico. And when I got those 3 options, I thought maybe by judging between those 3 options, it would be an easy answer. I couldn't decide between those 3, and I limited myself to 3 options. How am I going to decide? And so in the end, it turned out to be kind of this, I felt like almost a superficial, all right, we'll go with this one, just to make a choice. And I think there's a kind of a life application there as well, that sometimes there is no good answer. All of them are good answers. And so you just have to go with one, so you're not just sitting there wondering, what should I do? Just do something. And that's what we ended up doing with Guatemala. We just went partially just for superficial reasons. My wife really hates warm climates. She gets hot in Philadelphia. I think you would too, I guess, from Canada. But she gets really hot in Philadelphia, of all places. And so having one element that we could control in Quetzaltenango, where was a cooler environment, wow, if that could be one thing that we could control and we could be a pleasant, even though everything else is difficult, okay, we'll go with that one. And even though it was not the most, rich environment, it was one of the poorer countries that we looked at, but it turned out to just be such a blessing. I really think if we'd gone to Peru, if we had gone to Mexico, it would have been fine too as well. I'm sure we would fall in love with the brethren there as well. That's just the nature of the gospel. Any other question?
I have one question. How many of your kids can still speak Spanish?
The oldest 2 who grew up there speak really well. It's kind of funny. The ones that were not born in Guatemala speak Mexican really well. They speak Mexican really well. They speak Spanish really well. All right, that's good. But then, it's like I've never been to Guatemala. But then the ones that were born there, such as Alex, don't speak very much Mexican at all. So the oldest 2, Sophie and Katie, speak really, really well. It was amazing because when we were there, in the home, spoke in English. Outside of the home, we spoke in Spanish. We spoke in Spanish. And so that was just really easy. When we came back to the States, however, it was just really, really hard to continue the practice. We said gullibly, ignorantly, we came back and we said, we'll just switch the 2. We'll speak in English outside the home, and we'll speak in Spanish inside the home. And that was so hard to do. It's one thing to speak to an adult in Spanish and speak to an adult, study with an adult, but then it's another thing to actually play with a kid in Spanish and say, a rooster doesn't say cock-a-doodle-doo in Spanish. It says kikiriki. And how do you know these things? And what do you say in that moment? And the rooster said, where's that dictionary? And it just became so laborious that, it just didn't happen. Alex can speak a few words, but it's Sophie and Katie and Emma that can speak well because they grew up there. Yeah, some. It's not like living there, but Sophie and Katie, for example, they're going through a book. They have no idea about the grammar, so they're actually learning the grammar now. But they can read the whole thing fluently. But they're going through and actually learning the grammar now. they're speaking, taking, yeah, yeah. But they have that benefit of an upper leg. Any other questions? It is really amazing to me. I just sat down and thought, how many of the people here have actually been to Guatemala? Jeff and Libby have. Will has. Of course, these guys have. And then some connections that you know. Maybe I'm missing someone.
Dan
came down. That was something that was really encouraging. Dan came to Guatemala. He spoke some Spanish. And Heather, I don't think she spoke very much Spanish. But they didn't so much come... They came to encourage us as a family of English speakers. They remembered Dan was raised in Norway. That's why he has some different tendencies there. No, I don't think that accounts for everything. I can say that because he's not here. Dan remembers being in Norway, and I'm sure Don could say this, and he remembers people coming to Norway just to visit them. And that was really encouraging for us as well. They weren't so much coming to, okay, we're here and we're here to work and putting on a, okay, I'm really excited to do this. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes when preachers would come, it's like, all right, I'm here to work. I'm really here to work. Oh, I'm so excited. And it's all about me, me, me. And they're here to work, but they're here so much to have the experience of, you know, being in this foreign country. And we're stuck with these guys. Take him over here. Okay, now what do you want to see? Oh, you want to see the mountains? Let's go to the mountains. And they enjoy themselves and they go home and they're really excited. But boy, that was really hard to visit with them. But then other occasions, it was just, I don't want to be a party pooper at all about going to other countries. But I think to really make something successful, you have to as quickly as possible forget yourself. In any work. But as quickly as possible, forget yourself. Forget the obstacles. Forget the differences. And really quickly, just, okay, see if I can make a meaningful relationship and attachment. Because so often, you go somewhere and it becomes just about, whoa, I'm going to have to eat that. That's all the trip is about. And it's fun. That's really encouraging and to you. And it's encouraging as well to the brethren. And I don't want to be a downer to all of that. But where was I? I think there is something. Just Dan and Heather, when they came, I always remember their visit. They came and they just wanted to talk to us. And they wanted to be my kids with their kids. And I went to school with Dan. So I grew up with Heather a long, long time ago. That was just really, really encouraging to be able to, you know, share something. So even if you go to another country, and you visit someone, say Sean is over in the Ivory Coast, go there. Encourage him. Don't just ask for, hey, can we see any roller coasters around here? Do you have any? I hear there's ivory around this coast. Can I see some? No, you know, I don't know what they have in the Ivory Coast. This is a really important part. Just invest your time, invest yourself, even if it's not in the brethren there. Maybe you can't do that, but invest yourselves and then ask them, how can I be a service here? What can I do? You know, that one of the greatest services anyone has ever done for us when we were in Guatemala, Catherine Bishop, you know, a lot of you know Catherine Bishop. She came when Alex was going to be born. And she did a lot of visiting with the brethren and the sister while she was there. But what she came to do was, well, when Alex was born, she came to watch the kids. And we could just forget the kids, put them in Catherine's hands, and we could invite him into our lives. And I owe Catherine a lot. She's still, talk about a good woman.
if you're looking for good women, Catherine Bishop is just absolutely amazing. And she's now still serving other people in Philadelphia. She's not there because Philadelphia is just absolutely the most wonderful place in the universe. She's there to help with Christians there and encourage the Christians there. That's just, she's a good girl. And there's a lot of ladies like that, a lot of men like that as well. That's what we need to do. I don't know if I made my points exactly clear, but that's a really good thought. Anybody else have any applications or questions? If not, Joe is working his way toward forward.
Oh, isn't it?
Lord God, our Father, we thank you so much for the blessing of your love and of your word that you've given us that just exalts your love and shows your love to us in every way. We're thankful for opportunities that you give us to hear about others who share the same faith we do in different cultures and different places, even here in our own country, that share the same faith, Father, to encourage us, encourages us to know that we are all seeking your face. Seeking to grow together as we seek to serve you. We're thankful for the good work that is done in other places, Father. We're encouraged to see men who are willing and women who are willing to make certain sacrifices to be able to participate in these kind of works, that are willing to dedicate their time and their efforts to learning another language, learning another culture, living in a place that doesn't have the comforts they're used to. Father, you're our comfort. We seek you, and we learn so much by realizing that we are all just visitors here. We're looking for that country, for that city where you are the layer of the foundation, Father. So we pray you'd help us to remember that as we're preparing ourselves for whatever work that you give for us to do here. We'll be doing that work diligently to glorify you as we seek for our home with you. And if you give us work to do in other places, that we'll do that for your honor and your glory. Pray you'd help us to uplift the hands of those who are able to go, to encourage as we can. If we're prepared to go, to be willing to take that step and to go, and to seek encouragement where we can find it from those we're working with and from those who will come and hold our hands up. In all of this, though, our desire is that your name be made known among all the nations, Father, as they're seeking to flow toward you as we're learning these days. Help us to be the messengers that can help them find you. You can come up the mountain to Christ. We're so grateful for the love you've given us and revealing him to us and giving us the word that breaks down every culture and language barrier there is. It's one message, Father, and we share in it together. Help us to do that, Peter. Be with us this night. Help us to reflect on all that we've been learning together and on these encouraging things we've been hearing about tonight, Father. And bless us as we draw near to you. All these things we thank you in Jesus' name.
Okay, go ahead and stay where you are. I'm going to put my computer up and switch over here.